What does it really mean when we say a child knows how to swim? Swimming lessons are an important part of drowning prevention, but water safety is much broader. It includes supervision, preventing unexpected access to water, knowing how to respond in an emergency, understanding different aquatic environments, and developing the skills, knowledge, and judgment we often describe as water competency. My guest today is Chris Harkness, president of Safe Splash Swim School. Safe Splash has introduced its Safer Swim Swimmer Promise, an outcomes-based approach that identifies specific skills children should be able to demonstrate rather than simply measuring participation in swimming lessons. With September recognized as Baby Safety Month, this is also an opportunity to ask how early the water safety conversation should begin. Today, we're going to explore what children should actually know and be able to do around water, how we measure those abilities, what parents should understand from infancy onward, and whether we need a clearer pathway toward lifelong water safety. Chris, welcome to Deep Dive into Water Safety.
Thank you,
Welcome.
Margaret. Happy to be here.
Yeah, that's good. So you're down in Dallas. So before we start this conversation, because I'm eager to know everything about your program,
Sure.
tell us, Chris, how long have you been with Safe Splash? How did you get involved with this organization?
Yeah, I've been with Safe Splash for a little over 3 years. My professional background, I was a naval officer. Then I worked in retail for the vast majority of my time. And after a couple of stops along the way, like just a recruiter had reached out to me and said, "Hey, would you be interested in leading this, this emerging business that teaches swim lessons?" And I had worked in convenience retail for a long time. So after selling hot dogs and Coca-Cola and lots of other things that are bad for you, it felt really amazing to come home and say, "Guess what? I'm going to be teaching swim lessons for a living." And that's what kind of got me on board. I get to work with amazing franchise owners and a great team and provide a really great service to the communities that we serve.
So we want to talk about this. We're
Yeah.
out in Hawaii. We're surrounded by water.
For
We
sure.
do have people that teach lessons, but we have a lot of issues here. We have a high drowning rate, the
Yeah.
second highest in the United States. So let's start out this conversation. We hear the term swimming ability, water competency, and water safety used almost interchangeably. How do you distinguish among them, and where does water competency fit in with the larger goal of water safety? So, when a parent tells you, "My child can swim," what
Yeah.
do you want to know before you would consider that child competent in the water?
Yeah. So swimming is a skill, right? Like it's one aspect of what we'll call water safety. I think water safety involves everything from, supervision and barriers to entry for kids and qualifying people before they get into the water. And then the skill itself is part of water safety and ongoing education as well. Those are all aspects of what I would consider water safety. Competency is the ability to take a skill and then under pressure, right, or something unexpected, apply the skill to the desired outcome, right? So it's very different to be able to, swim the backstroke in an indoor pool versus I just fell off of my paddle board in open water. What do I do now? Right. And so it's understanding that you have to build the skills to be able to perform under pressure. You have to be able to test those skills in a pressured environment. That's what leads to competency. And then repetition as well leads to competency. But it's just one part of what I would consider true water safety.
So this sounds like this is what Safe Splash's framework is. So I'm very interested in this
Yeah.
because when I have committee meetings in education, they talk about what are the metrics? What are the metrics for ISR? What are the metrics for YMCA? And YMCA will come back and give you the metrics they use.
Right.
But I still think it's limiting, right? And then the question is, how often is it measured? Do we know, how long those lessons were given? Do they come back? Is it all the time? Where's the commitment?
Right.
Although, and then What does the child feel maybe a year later? I mean, that's research down the road, but I think it's important in understanding because there's no standardized place in the government that says we need to teach these basic things for water survival education.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of it. And even any assessment that we do at Safe Splash is a point in time. Like we've provided instruction up to a point in time. We provide a test where we look at very specific skills and the ability of the child or the adult to demonstrate those skills and say we say yes, you passed today inside of our pool. That doesn't mean a year from now you could still pass. And so that's really next step, for us as we think about this business is how do you have the right safety checks in place and bring people in when you bring up a broader conversation about people's access to water, we do driver's license tests, right? And we have if you go a period of time without testing, you have to retest to be able to continue to drive, or you demonstrate that you don't know how to drive, you have to, reapply for a license. We never really do that with water safety, except for the people there are lifeguards. We recertify lifeguards on a period, on a periodicity, but we don't do those with the people who are actually using the swimming pool or the beach or anything like that. And I think it's an opportunity for us to go forward. Our first part was just let's start with what are we trying to do for the student? And what are we trying to communicate to the parent? Like, why are they coming to us in the first place? A lot of times that, a parent is just coming into your school for the first time going, I know my kid knows how to swim, but I don't know what that means. And so we try to lay it out for them is this journey that we're taking taking your swimmer on. And it really starts with comfort in the water. And we define comfort not just like is the water temperature correct? It's a healthy respect, right? Is it's water is I've heard the term an attractive nuisance, right? It's like people want to get into a pool, but it's actually inherently unsafe to get into a pool. And so, developing the respect for the water, asking permission, right? And so children automatically, most of the time, have a sense of, okay, if I have to ask permission, that means I'm asking of somebody older than me. I'm not asking my friend, can I get in the pool? So having an adult supervision around, getting comfortable with breath control in the water in simple movements, right? And so being prepared to learn how to swim is really the first step. So that's comfort. And then we want to get them capable. And that's where the Safer Swimmer Promise comes in, is we have a list, a set of 10 skills that we want to teach a child swimmer. And it's everything from safe entry into the pool, being able to, kind of turn over, move through the water, but while taking breaths, it starts to look like swimming, and then sight, where they're going to exit the pool, get to that exit, and safely remove themselves from the pool. That's like first step capable, right? Like I'm now capable in the water of moving myself around, and getting out, but that's not competency, right? Competency comes with repetition. And a little bit of testing and building of endurance. And that's really the third step in anybody's swimmer journey is building competency. I don't think that ever really stops, right? It's like you can always become a stronger swimmer, a more capable, you can tread water for longer. And then the fourth for us is competitive. Is like some kids, it turns into their sport, right? And we think that's great, and we want to be able to support those who want to swim faster and further. We definitely do that. But like mission for us is let's get them capable. That's like minimum expectation. And we believe that, we have a curriculum that can get them to that, and then we have them demonstrate skills. But we really want to push through competency.
Well, that's really good. And we'll talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But you brought up something that was really interesting I've never heard said. We give driver's license tests People have to go back in. And those are standardized. They're not by state that,
Well, yeah, but
it's a
yes.
little bit, but they're standards, but we don't have that for swimming. So I could say I took my kids to this swimming
For sure.
lesson, and I think they got all the survival skills they're supposed to need, right?
Yes.
And there's no bare minimum that you need to spend this much time, needs to, you need to pass this and you need to come back within a certain period of time, just like a driver's license. I never thought of that. That's
Right.
brilliant, actually, Chris.
Well, I won't go to the brilliant stage, but the reality is, like, there are different standards, right? The Red Cross has a standard, YMCA has a standard, we have a standard. There's no unified, the United States Army has a rescue swimmer standard that they use. And so there is no one standard, and I think we kind of use the eyeball test. Does that person look like they're capable in the water? I had the fortune of raising four kids, two who were Boy Scouts. Boy Scouts have a standard. Before any kid goes on a summer camp or on any water activity, they have a certain set of skills that they have to demonstrate on an annual basis. And so I think if you're thinking about water safety for a kid, is like a parent should know what those a set of standards. We share what the skills are. They get to watch what the test is. We could, it's a good idea. Do we teach them how to administer the test on their own, as just a simple check of, can my kid make it in and out of the pool on their own?
Right. I think parents being involved is a good piece, but then they have ownership in it all. So I want to go
Absolutely.
to this question. September is Baby Safety Month.
Yes.
Are we starting the water safety conversation with families early enough, or are we waiting until children are old enough for formal swimming lessons? What should parents of infants and toddlers understand about water safety before their child ever takes a formal swim lesson?
So the short answer is no, we aren't starting early enough. I think first of all, it's a sad statistic, right? The leading cause of accidental death for children under the age of four is drowning. It's largely preventable, and about 70% of those are happening outside of swim time. So it's not when mommy and daddy are in the pool with the kid. It can happen in a bathtub. People just turn their back, to answer their phone while their child's in the tub. It's got to start, it should start at pregnancy, right? It's like, hey, you're getting ready to have a kid. Here are things to consider. I think New York State is leading the way on some of this, where you can't leave the hospital or the birthing center with your child until you've watched a video and received a pamphlet on water safety. I think those are simple things of, pediatricians have a role in this. Schools have a role in this, in educating parents earlier and earlier on just the risk factors, right? And then how to prevent a lot of those risks. So before we ever start talking about swimming lessons, water safety really starts with adult awareness and adult supervision. And being actively engaged. I grew up near the water, and I can name a number of close calls, right, of that either I had or friends had. And if an adult had been watching, it probably would have been a little different and less of a close call. And I think when we hear about the different child drownings, they're all tragic. And there are very, very few of them. There you go. Well, what else could have happened, that there were preventable outcomes, right from the onset?
So you work, Safe Splash works with very young children and their parents. At that
Yes.
age, what should the goal actually be? Learning to swim, becoming comfortable in the water, developing foundational skills, educating the parent, or some combination?
Yeah, it's definitely a combination. And the younger the child, the less the expectation that, the child should learn how to swim. There are always going to be prodigies that, learn the freestyle at the age of two and can make it. But like we start with babies as early as 4 months. And we always have the parent in the water holding the child. And that's really just about developing comfort, eliminating the sense of shock of being in water, starting to learn breath control and when can you breathe, when do you hold your breath and when do you not. And you can start to teach some fairly fundamental skills of being able to roll over, potentially floating assisted. But it's a lot about parent education. And what we're trying to teach the parent, along with, making the infant or the toddler comfortable in the water, is letting them know, right? Like, these are the things to look for. Here's how you ultimately support your child as they're developing comfort in the water. And then it's probably around age 3 or 4 where we really start to teach, strokes in swimming and the basics of swimming. But at an early age, it's more about comfort.
So my question to you would be, I have lots of young people here who have young kids that are starting to do that and really care about it. How would you find a reliable instructor? I mean, Safe Splash is a whole group of people, certified swim people around the country. But we're limited here. So what would you be looking for? And even with Safe Splash versus something else, how would a parent decide which place they should go to? I've got a 4-month-old. Who am I going to trust here?
I think, like, I'm never going to claim to tell a parent exactly what to do, right? Like, I think parenting is a skill that's developed over time, and you got to trust your instincts. But I would ask a handful of questions, right? Of what are the lessons with you going to deliver, right? Like, setting an expectation, how long does it take? And what are the outcomes? I would observe some lessons as well. Watch, another child, another parent in the water, with the instructor, and that will give you a lot of indication as to whether the instructor is progressing people and what their capabilities are. And then kind of ask for the bona fides, right? Like, how many kids have you graduated? How many lessons have you taught? I think those are all things, because there's no one certification that's out there. We're very proud of our partnership with, the National Drowning Prevention Alliance. But there are others, right? There are Red Cross certified instructors. But even then, like, just because somebody's certified doesn't mean they're good at it. And it doesn't mean that you're going to get the outcome that you want. So as a parent, I would start to think, what is it that I want out of swim lessons? What is the timeline in which I need to accomplish that? And then, can I find a provider who can accomplish both?
Well, that's good information. So there's another piece that Dr. Justin Semstrock came on. There's two pieces, I want to say. And he said any parent of a child who lives around water should be CPR trained, breaths and compressions. Okay. And basically, what's going on now is compressions is the way they teach it so the general public can be, able to help somebody if they have a heart attack, and then they can use an AED. But we're around water. And he made it very strong. He's come on the show twice saying it's really important that they do that. Do you say anything to parents about CPR in your swim?
It's funny you say it. We have just started that, and it's not in all of our schools, but we do CPR instruction in our lobbies. And so we do. I think it's an absolute layer of the overall water safety is, okay, when things go bad, what's your plan and how do you react to it? And so, because every plan, only works as well as, the conditions that you put into it. And so we believe that strongly, is that absolutely parents should know infant CPR, and then know adult CPR as well. They're not terribly different. So, and it usually takes one night. Like, it's a one night investment of your time, to be able to learn that life-saving skill.
Well, as Dr. Semstrat said, The couple of minutes in those details make all the difference. So if
For
you can
sure.
be giving oxygen to a young child right away, instead of not knowing what to do or just doing compressions, it could make all the difference.
Agreed.
So you also said the school should be involved. How can companies like Safe Splash partner with schools? Because we're trying to get water safety education back in the schools, because the question always be, we don't have enough pools here. We have a huge ocean, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. But
Yeah.
we also need education, because that's how people will see it as a priority. They talk about it, go home with something they've done in math or science or even read about, and tell their
Right.
parents. And then that becomes the thing. Well, I guess I should know more about CPR. I guess I should have you doing this and going
Right.
back to swimming lessons. So have you ever thought of partnering with
Yeah,
education?
where we're most effective is when we actually get in front of parent groups at schools. And it's not just, some pamphlet that goes home and in the child's folder. When we can have one of our franchise owners or one of our general managers at a parent, a parent event. Sometimes it's, the Parent Teacher Association. Sometimes it's a fundraiser. There's always some kind of cost of entry into our schools. And we're a for-profit business, and they're not always happy to have a for-profit business, come in to talk about it. So we'll work through our nonprofit arm as well to basically just come in and talk about water safety the same way we're talking. Like, this conversation
Right.
is very similar to what we can talk to parents about. Be there to talk about the layers of safety, and then talk about their role as a parent. And then, if they're open to the conversation, how we can help. But we don't ever presume to be the only ones who know how to teach kids water safety and competency. I think there are a lot of great providers out there. But that, like, schools absolutely have a role. And I think you're starting to see more communities think about this in a way of like, well, if I'm sending my school or my kid to school to learn math, why not have a requirement, learn how to swim,
Right.
as well.
Some countries have competency for swimming, that
Yes.
by a certain grade level, they have to do these things.
Yes. Yeah, I was it's funny, like today, 2 hours ago, I was on a call with a prospective franchisee. He grew up in Great Britain, and he's like, you don't exit elementary school without knowing how to swim. And when I came to the United States, it was surprising to me. He's like, you have more water here than we do in Great Britain. And it's not a requirement. But yeah, I think Australia is probably like the gold standard
Right.
on
Singapore has
water.
that too. They
Yeah.
have that kind of requirement. And so I want to go into this Safer Promise program, but as
Sure.
examples of how things happen, I knew someone here who had a young child, and they were thinking they needed swim lessons, but we couldn't really figure out how that was happened. They went to Singapore. They had somebody with their child, right? And there's millions of pools in Singapore. I had no idea.
Right.
There's millions of pools. And the young child's walking past the pool in his clothes, right, with his other friend. The other friend like hits him and he falls into the pool. And
Okay.
the person who's supposed to be watching him got him, but they had to take him to the hospital because we all know drowning's a process.
Right.
Stages of drowning. So that's really interesting to me. So I want to talk about how your program, the Swimmer Promise, around specific skills and outcomes, and what problems were you trying to solve with this development?
Yeah, that there were. I'll get into a little of how we got to it
Yeah.
first, right? Is, I run a business, and one of the things we were trying to figure out is, what is our brand? How do we differentiate ourselves? What are we trying to accomplish? So we spoke to a bunch of parents in focus groups. Some were people who used to swim with us and left. Some had never swam with us. Some were people who were in the marketplace to, they had kids who wanted to learn how to swim. And we asked a series of questions. We spent hours with these parents. And one of the questions that stuck out to me was, we just asked, how long do you think it should take your kid to learn how to swim? I remember it very clearly. There was one mother, she had a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. She's like, my 6-year-old, I think, can learn to swim in four lessons, four 30-minute lessons. And then she said, my 4-year-old, he's not quite as coordinated. It might take 8. So, 8 weeks, my kid can learn how to swim. In that very same group, we had somebody who was a collegiate swimmer, and he's like, I have a 9-year-old. I think it will take 2 years. So we had between 4 weeks and 2 years in a small sample group, right? And then when you ask the question, well, what does it mean to swim? Then you get even more variety, right? Of what does that mean? And so that really opened up our minds to, one, parents are looking to us, and they're looking to any authority, right? For not just the lessons, but information on what is it that we're trying to do. And then there's just a, I think there's a general dissatisfaction with anything that's open-ended, right? Like any open-ended subscription, whether it's Netflix or swim lessons, people have some kind of negative connotation associated with that. And so we felt like we owed parents a definition and an outcome, right? Is like, this is what we're building toward. Now, what is that outcome? We want a kid to survive what is the most common, incident. Like, I fall in a pool with my clothes on. Like, that happens, right? And the number one reason the kid drowns in that situation is, one, they're just not comfortable being in their clothes. And they often spot the opposite wall, and they try to get to the opposite wall. Where if they would have just turned around and grabbed the wall behind them without panicking, self-rescue is much more likely in that situation. And so we did, like, those are the skills that we wanted to look for, is like, can you jump in safely? Can you get to a horizontal body position so that you're more stable in the water? Can you move while lifting your head up to, to take a breath? Back float, there's a series of skills. And so the idea is like, okay, something bad happened to me. I'm okay with it because I've been in this situation before. Now I can turn around and get myself out of the pool. Those are the lessons. Like, that's what we define as is capable in the water. And we think we can do that with, a kid who's 4 to 7 years old who comes to regular lessons. We can do that in less than a year very consistently.
Less than a year, but that's not four lessons. Thank you.
Yeah, that's not four lessons. And we're very like some kids are going to be fast, right? Like, we know, like, you see the kids who are coordinated, they learn to ride a bike and, on their own. And so sometimes it's faster, but it'll take longer. It's more than 4 weeks in most instances, but an athletic 7-year-old, it's possible, right? Like that they can move quickly through it. But we don't, that's not, the normal for us. The
So it's a
norm is
commitment.
really, it's between 8 and 12 months. But you can speed that up too. We're talking about half hour a week, every week. If you go, a half hour twice a week, you cut that time down pretty substantially. So, it's really about exposure and repetition.
I think that's really important, and I think it's a commitment, like you said. Experienced elite swimmer said it would take his child 2 years, right?
Right.
So that tells you he knows something
That's
about
right.
water competency. We
Yeah.
also have an ocean, and that has different skills. How would you attack that from Safe Splash?
Yeah. I think I would never say your kid's ocean safe coming through one of our programs. Is that open water is just a, it's, you're adding so many more variables into it, from tides, currents, temperature, visibility, biologics, right? Like, there's so many more variables into it, that I think it's a challenge to the private swim industry to start to think about how do you develop an open water program? What would that look like? Because right now it's almost just experiential, right? It's like most people go to the beach and there's not somebody teaching them how to do open water swimming or how to pull themselves out of a rip tide or any of that. And so I think it's a big gap in overall swim education.
Well, to mention experiential, we were trying to do different things here because rip currents are a big issue for us.
Right. Okay.
So, Bruce Hopkins, who is Bondi Rescue and head of Bondi Beach, came on the show and talked about this thing he was doing around the world, rip current clinics. So, Kalani Vieira, as head of Ocean Safety Bureau, goes, "I really like that idea, Margaret." So, we ran the first ever rip current clinic here in Hanalei. And we had for young people and for older people to get in something and experience what a rip current. Now, it wasn't like some extreme rip current with lots of waves, but it was a rip current,
Right.
understanding where they were, where you should get in the ocean, not in everybody goes to avoid the waves and goes in the flat area. So he took them through that. And the people that got to go through that felt like they really understood something. You could
Right.
tell people about rip currents, don't panic, do this and that. But until you actually do it and are told a certain way, and his issue, as you said, being horizontal, he's talking about you just have to float. Do not swim. Go with this current. Now turn around and see where you are. Now you see this breaking wave. Now you can stand up and walk out.
Right.
And that's a set of skills that people really liked. And he's willing to come back and teach guards his technique or whatever he's doing, because everybody can say, "I could do that." But as you know, certifying people who are doing swim lessons, right? There's
Right.
skill set to all of it, right?
Correct. I agree. I think the challenge in Hawaii is twofold, right? It's one, just the access, and it's everywhere. And then I'm like the number of visitors, right? It's not locals, right? Locals have a healthy respect, for the water, and often, not always, right? But often know where the danger spots are.
Right.
But I give Hawaii a lot of credit for the times I've visited is the activity of the lifeguards, constantly sorting through people and literally telling people, do not do what I think you're about to try to do, because you don't look like those other people that can do it.
That's exactly
And,
right.
and so,
Well said.
like, there's a reality to that. And so, like, in Hawaii, it's pretty unique, but I love the idea of creating real world situations and like where you have the right safety measures in place,
Right.
so that people can test limits, and really understand what they are, what their own comfort, and capability level is.
Right. We have junior lifeguards, which is across the United States, but that's limiting because not everybody can go to that. Not everybody feels they belong in that
Right.
situation. But I agree with you on that. So, should the swim industry be moving away from measuring lesson participation and levels and toward demonstrating specific competencies?
So I love closed-ended questions. The answer is yes. Is I'll expound, I'll expound on it is
Please do.
because we're trying to get to an outcome, right?
Yes.
Is like we're not just, did the kid take lessons? Having a measurable outcome, and I think in swimming and in water safety we can have that, is like there are demonstrable skills. That can a kid swim 50 meters? Like that's defined, right? Without having to be rescued, right? How many breaths did it take? Were they able to do it in a period of time? Like those are all competency measures and skill demonstrations that we can do, and that we have to hold ourselves accountable to that we're developing that. And I think, by and large, most swim schools are doing something like that. They're just not putting a timestamp on it, right? To get it done in a reasonable amount of time. And that's where we're trying to push the overall industry is like, I think lots of different schools can teach a kid how to swim. I think they can teach competency. And I think we're all advocates for, stricter water safety. Now it's like, can we hold ourselves accountable to doing it in a reasonable amount of time and for more people?
Well, that's interesting. A reasonable amount of time. Some people think they can do that in 4 weeks.
Yeah. Well, that's a conversation though, right? Like if
Yeah.
somebody comes to you with an unreasonable expectation, you're going to tell them, here's why I can't do that, right? Is like, this is more difficult than maybe you're anticipating, and here's how long we think it will take. If your kid's exceptional and we get it done faster, fantastic. I think everybody thinks their kid is going to be Michael Phelps, but it's just not the reality. And if they are, fantastic. And we'll put the stamp and say, yes, this person can swim. But in most instances, I think parents just don't have the education necessarily, because most of us don't remember how we learned how to swim.
Right.
It's like we may have a vague memory of it, but we certainly don't remember how long it took and what commitment our parents made to us to learn how to do it. So filling in that gap, I do think, is the role of the swim educator.
Okay. So you say it should take longer. Should there be a standard? Because what if we in Kauai said, oh, we're going to offer free swim lessons and it's going to be for a couple of weeks, half an hour each? How do I know that's enough?
You got to administer some kind of skill test at the
And
end,
you
right?
administer the skill test after the 4 weeks,
And
and
if
then
they
how do
don't
you know that
pass,
they'll know it in 6 months?
yeah, that's right. Yeah, like if they don't get it done in that amount of time, not then, those 4 hours of instruction, or two, I guess you said half an hour for 4 weeks, those 2 hours of instruction weren't adequate to achieve, the desired outcome.
So there's no research that says.
There isn't. Like the only research that I've seen, it's red associated with the Red Cross, and it's decades old. It's basically just correlating the ability to swim with reduction in in drowning. But nobody's done any scientific study of this is exactly how long it takes to learn these different skills. Now, and I think that would be difficult to do.
Right.
Humans learn at different rates, and so it's not quite like it hasn't been studied, just like spelling or how long does it take to learn arithmetic.
Yeah,
So
but those things aren't risk-taking, really. But so if
yeah.
I take these lessons and then maybe you have research on me and I come back, I don't know, next year for the next 4 lessons. Be kind of nice to see if you could track the people you had to see how their skill
Yeah.
set is after that time, but
So we're at the early innings on this. We're about a year into the program, and this year we introduced what we call safety checks, where we do bring in, we offer to bring in the student for free, and run them through the test,
oh, I like that. I like
and see,
that.
and see where they are. I don't have a lot of data I could share with you yet on that we've validated it, what's the stickiness. And it's going to be largely case dependent. Like, once your kid took lessons, do you have a pool in the backyard and they swim all the time?
It's different. Yeah.
Or is it, we went on one vacation and we haven't been in the water, in the last 9 months. I do think there is a point. When you, as you approach probably adolescence, where swimming starts to be sticky, and your ability to, to swim, sticks with you. But until that point, it requires repetition and practice. And even strong swimmers, like I'm sure I was an amazing swimmer as a high schooler, but now I'd struggle to, swim a half mile. I could do it. It wouldn't look pretty. Somebody would probably call 911 and ask for help. But I could do it. But with practice, I could get it back pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that's true of visitors that come here and do things like snorkeling and other things they think they can still do. And they're a certain age and they're not as fit as they thought they were, right?
Yeah,
I
for
think that's
sure.
true of probably everybody, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
Assuming.
I think, coming, bringing this back to Hawaii in particular, open water requires immense fitness, and confidence, really. Is like you lose visual bearings fairly quickly. It doesn't take too long to get over the horizon where you do some of the snorkeling, as well, so you can get disoriented, as well. And just wave action. And then most like, having been around the ocean a good chunk of my life, most people just don't have an appreciation for current.
Yeah.
It's like just staying in one spot requires a lot of effort. And in the Pacific, you have really strong currents. Those islands just kind of pop up out of nowhere, and then you're in deep water currents, pretty quickly, around Hawaii.
So where I'm gonna just ask this little question. Where did you grow up around water?
So I was my dad was a naval physician, and like I was born in the Midwest, but we lived in Southern California for 3 years, and then a little town called Orange Park, Florida, outside of Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah.
So spent a lot of time on East Coast,
The
beaches,
Atlantic.
Florida. Yes, yeah. So no clarity. Yeah, murky waters.
Okay, so we're doing swim lessons here in pools, and
Yes.
there is a group called Leahi Swim School, which Nakamakai works with. They're doing a lot of work in the ocean, but that's not always able. Have you thought of branching out to do open ocean work?
So, there are people on my team that they, yes, thought about it. There's a lot of opportunity for us to just, to continue to expand with pools. I think where we have schools that are in proximity to lakes, where we have schools that are in proximity to oceans, it is something that we need to consider. Our insurance company will probably have an issue with us doing it, but it's something like it's a sensible product to offer, because when you think about like. Part of our kind of ethos at Safe Splash is we believe that the skill, like swimming, is a life skill, and it opens up opportunities, and it should be joyful.
Yes.
And like I remember the first time I stepped into the ocean, and like I spend a lot of time in boats and on surfboards and things like that, and my whole family does. And it's just kind of part of who we are. And I want my kids to be able to experience that. And I want other kids to be able to experience that. I think it just opens up a whole different world of opportunities. And so we need people to be able to do that safely. And we should provide those experiences.
Okay, so maybe you will. But now that we're
Yes.
still in pools, we can talk about the layers of prevention. Do your instructors talk about those kinds of things, like
Yeah, we talk about
seismic,
them at
phones
least,
down?
monthly. So we have what we call them splash and tells once a month, where the parents actually come out on the swim pool deck, and we demonstrate, here's what the kids are, accomplished over the last, 2 to 3 weeks. And then we have a safety topic that we hit. We also have Water Safety Month every May, where we go deep into this. And we do everything from teaching kids how to properly use a life preserver. And if 3 or 4 kids fell into a body of water with a life preserver, how to stick together and work together. And we also do swims with kids in their clothes. So we do entries into the pool with clothes. And then we provide a lot of resources. This is where we really partner with the NDPA. Pretty deeply is providing collateral to parents and teaching them about, what does a good barrier look like? What does active adult supervision look like? What does your rescue plan look like? It's top of mind for us. It's not just about teaching kids how to swim. It's about overall water safety. And then we want to extend it. I love that you brought up this, CPR isn't just something you do when somebody falls in a pool. That's a skill you need to have all the time.
Right.
And we're working toward becoming more of a community hub, where we talk about childhood safety. Our parent company, Youth Enrichment Brands, just started a new project. It's called Generation Real, where we're not just looking at, safety aspects of, the activities that we do, but also digital safety, and, the problems that, camera lenses that face us, in social media are presenting to children.
Right.
We think it's a crisis that needs to be solved. So,
Oh, that's very good. So you're taking it from a systems approach, which is really excellent. And I think with this model, you're educating parents, and then parents may say, well, why aren't we getting this in the schools? Why isn't this a priority? Because parents have a lot of influence when it comes to things like this. The issue for drowning prevention is that are drowning is that it is preventable, and prevention always comes now with an equitable access. You're a private company,
For sure.
you charge lessons, which is great, and there's probably no sliding scale with what you do.
Well, I wouldn't say there's a sliding scale, but we do offer scholarships.
Yeah.
Our parent company has a nonprofit. It's called Play Without Limits, and we work with them to identify, children in need, who don't have equal access. That doesn't solve all of it, by any means, and I wouldn't claim to. I think there are multiple approaches to this. And so parent involvement is step number one, like educating parents. If your school, like if you're looking to the school to do it, that pressure has to come from a collection of parents that want to do it, right? It's often like our schools are a reflection of our communities. And so if you want the school to do that, get your community involved. I don't necessarily think it requires political change. It'd be nice if that's what they want to do, but like a group of like-minded parents, I've seen them implement different sports teams
Right.
and different activities. This can be another one, right? Is like there are a lot of pools in the United States that aren't used, whether it's a hotel, a community center. Is gaining access to that through school is a possible way to, possible way to do it. Swim lessons do not have to be expensive. I don't think we're particularly expensive. I think we're trying to make a living doing it, and
Right.
we have several people that we employ to do it. But we think it's high value. But there are other ways to get it done, and there are communities that are excellent at providing swim resources to their citizens.
I think that's very well said, Chris. We're just struggling with no pools, so
All right. You have them. They're at the hotels, right? Like you gotta, the resorts have pools, but
don't know if they want all the kids coming while they're
It's interesting. One of the things that we actually do teach swim lessons in gyms, and we teach swim lessons in a handful of hotels. We have retirement communities that have pools where we have a program where our franchise owners will basically share revenue with the facility if they allow us to, because most swimming pools, especially private ones, are idle. Most of the time, a resort in Hawaii is probably not going to have an idle time with their pool. But there are plenty like community centers that are.
I like those ideas. So here we are in Hawaii. If Hawaii wanted to build a water safety pathway, beginning with parents and babies, continuing through schools and community programs, and eventually incorporating ocean competency, what lessons from Safe Splash would you encourage us to use?
Yeah, I think it's like be realistic about each age group, right? From kind of birth to mobility is that's about parent education first and foremost, and parent awareness. And just, anytime a child is near water, an adult has to be, full attention, right? No distractions, while that's occurring. Like, designate somebody, like, you're the adult in charge, while this, and that's even bath time. And so it starts with parent education and then working towards comfort, like how to get, how to bring your child into the water, make sure they, they can control their breath and start to understand and build a respect, for the water. Once you're kind of toddler to, let's say, 4 years old, that's the introductory, capabilities, and the early stages of learn to swim. And I think you do that through lessons, at that point. And then 4 to 7 is really start to, learn the competency of swimming. So learning the strokes, breath control, and a little bit of endurance. Then I think you can make some transition, right, into, as the kids get a little, past age 7, 8, identify those who are going to be competitive and want to spend extensive amounts of time in water, and start exposing them to, a controlled environment. I love this con, this, the conversation we had about the Rip Current Clinic. That becomes part of it. And then as they move into adolescence and teenage, you know that the risk taking goes up, right? Is like, we're gonna, in Hawaii, you're gonna be surfing and boogie boarding and, kayaking and doing all that. Is laying down a foundation of what is safe look like, who should be around, what kind of supervision. And then as you move into adults, right? Like, adults should have access to learn to swim, as well, and really have a view of what is a safe water activity for my level of capability. We have ski slopes that have, black diamonds. We should have beaches rated similarly.
Oh, those are very good analogies you've given. The driver's license, the ski levels with black diamonds. Those are all things probably people would understand, who live different places. But that's you just kind of laid out a framework that I've seen that the UK just did, Australia, New Zealand has, and then a pathway to get there, right? I don't know. I think you should move in the direction of open water now, Chris.
I think it's a great idea. I'm going to go from this to our product team and have that conversation.
And I think it's great you're doing CPR, breaths with compressions. That's really important. And I think the other piece that I find great is because I never had that with my kids' swimming lessons, talking about life jackets or all the issues about staying safe, and that once a month you do something with that, and then you have a safety month, and then you deep dive even further into what safety means because it's a bathtub, it's a pool, it's an ocean, whatever, right?
It could be a ditch in your backyard. It's,
Correct.
it water attracts kids. They're gonna go and mess around in it, if it's there, and parents need to be aware of where that water is. So,
Is there one other thing you'd like to tell people in Hawaii? Parents of children.
yeah, you're privileged to live in one of the most, beautiful places on the face of the earth, and just respect it and respect the, the power of the water, that's around it. Your kids follow your example, and so set a strong example for water safety.
Excellent. One of the important messages from this conversation is that water safety doesn't begin with the child who starts swimming lessons, and it doesn't end when a child learns to swim. It begins with parents, caregivers, develops through education and experience, and includes the skills, knowledge, and judgment children need as they encounter different aquatic environments. Swimming lessons are an important part of that pathway. But the larger challenge is determining what children should know and be able to do at different stages of life, making those opportunities available to every child, and measuring whether what we are teaching is actually making them safer. Here in Hawaii, that pathway must ultimately extend beyond the pool to an understanding of the ocean and changing conditions that surround us. Chris, you've given us some really good examples of what Safe Splash does, what their pathway is with their promise, and what you see as a foundation, and some good analogies so we can look at saying safer in the water, which
Absolutely.
was exactly what we needed. It's
Awesome.
been a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Margaret. Really appreciate it.
I hope we see you out here. I'd like you to come and see what we're doing in swimming.
Yeah, I will be out there soon.
Maybe you
Yeah,
come with Alyssa.
that sounds great.
Okay.
All
Thank you
right.
so much.
Thanks, Margaret.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.